All right, Rabosai, good morning. Let's get started. We've got a lot to do today. Today's daf is Kuf Yud 110, and we are picking up on 109b. So also remember again, we're going to pick up six lines up from the bottom. Kuf Tesamud Beis, six lines up from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Li'olam Yidbak Adam Metovim. Rabosai, a person should always try literally to cling to good people, which Rabosai in this context means that a person should try, if possible, to marry into a good family. Why? Shehari Moshe Nasa Bas Yisro. Yatsam Imenu Yonasan. We'll say Moshe Rabbeinu married a daughter of Yisro, had a grandson Yonasan. Remember again, we began discussing this Yonasan, his grandson who is the Kohen for Pesal Michan, an idolatrous priest, or a priest for idolatry, I should say. And I will say, you understand, the Gemara understands that the ability for a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately to have a grandson who worships idolatry is a function that there is idolatry in the genes, meaning it's there. It's there. Yisro was a Chalzer B'tshuva. Yisro ultimately, again, becomes a Ger Tzedek. But Lamais, at the end of the day, there is a history of idolatry that's embedded there in the spiritual DNA. Aaron, Shinasa Bas Aminadav, Yatzimena Pinchas. Aaron, on the other hand, who married the daughter of Aminadav, who was a great tzaddik, so has a grandson like Pinchas. So we'll say it's amazing. If you contrast the two grandsons, the grandson of Aaron ultimately is Pinchas, the grandson of Moshe Avinu is Yonasan. So the Gemara says, 1 second, Pinchas Lav, Yisro Asim. But wasn't Pinchas also a descendant of Yisro? V'haksiv ve'elazar ben Aaron lakach lami b'nos putiya lo li'isha. But yet the pasuk says that Elazar, the son of Aaron, took for himself from the daughters of Putiel a wife. So we'll say, who's Putiel? So my lab to asi mi Yisro shepitim agolim la'avodazara. Isn't Putiel a reference to Yisro? Now why is he called Putiel? Putiel from a notion that he fattened calves for idolatry. In other words, a reference to his idolatrous practice. Lo, Putiel is the asimi Yosef shepit peit b'Yitzro. No, we'll say what it means is he's a descendant of Yosef. It was a descendant of Yosef, or I should say, again, that Elazar married from Benos Putiel a woman who was a descendant of Yosef, shepit peit b'Yitzro. So we'll say ultimately, again, shepit peit means who fought against his Yetzara. 1 second. Valo shvatim mevazim also vaomrim reisem ben puti ze shepiteim avi imo agalam laavodazara yarog nasi shevet miyisro. We're about to say after the episode where Pinchas goes ahead and kills Zimri, who was a tribal prince, after the episode of immorality with Cosby, the shvatim ganged up on Pinchas and they said, "What a chutzpah! Do you see this man who comes from an idolatrous grandfather is now standing up and killing a prince of Israel?" So we seem to have a conflict. Ultimately, again, whose family did Elazar marry into? Did Elazar marry into the family who descended from Yosef, or did he marry into a family that descended from Pinchas? Top of Kuf Yud, to which the Gemara essentially, I'm sorry, from Yisro, thank you. And the Yisro says, so what does the Gemara answer? Essentially, the Gemara answers both. Both in reality, again, Aaron married from a girl, Mibnos Putiel, who descended from both Yisro as well as Yosef. So how does that work? Ella, Iavua di'ine mi Yosef. So we'll say, if at the end of the day, his maternal grandfather was from Yosef, then Ima di'ime mi Yisro. His maternal grandmother ultimately was from Yisro. Iavua di'ime mi Yisro. If his maternal grandfather was from Yisro, or I should say, if her maternal grandfather is referring to Aaron's wife, or Elazar's wife, then Ima di'ime mi Yosef. Then her maternal grandmother was from Yosef. We'll say the idea being that it's possible that Aaron married into a girl, the daughter of Aminadav, who was a descendant of both Yisro as well as Yosef. And therefore, again, Mibnos Putiel ultimately, again, I will say, is understood as both of these traits, as shepite magalam laavodazara and shepite peit biyisro, dekanami dechsev mibenos putiel tarti. Rabbi says, so the Gemara makes an observation. The Torah itself says mibenos putiel. Ultimately, again, we're using the plural over there, which means that again, the Torah is making reference to both sides of the genealogy, i.e., from Yisro as well as from Yosef. So if you look at the Rashbam says Putiel, it's a little bit, it's like halfway down the short lines. Midlo kasav Putiel below Yud, Hilchach Shnei Pituyim Darshinan. So we'll say Putiel could have been written without the Yud. So Rashbam understands that since it's written with the Yud, it's Lashon Rabim, it's referencing more than one, a reference to the fact that this woman was a descendant of both of these individuals, Shepitim, either Shepitim Agadim Avodah Zarah or Shepit Beit B'Yitzro. So the idea being that Aaron ultimately married into this family, where the girl was a descendant of both Yisro as well as Yosef, but apparently again, the Yosef impact was more greatly felt in the descendants of Aaron. So the Gemara says, okay, Dekanami Dechsimim Nos Putil Tarti Mashma. So Shmamina. Amar Rava, so we'll say Rava says, so we'll say, the Yisod that the Gemara is saying over, and this is an incredibly important idea, which is that Lamaisa, the family in which you marry into, so has an impact on the family you raise. It's an important Yisod. The family you marry into has an impact on the family you raise. Which is another way of saying, essentially, that when you marry someone, so there's a residual impact of their family on that person, and they bring that to their marriage as well. And I will say, the offspring you produce ultimately is a manifestation of the composite identities of both of the parents. Well, so I'll give you a dramatic example of this. Dramatic example of this is that a mamzer. So what's a mamzer? Don't point to anyone. But you know what's a mamzer? So we know a mamzer is the product of an illicit union. So let's say there's an act of adultery that occurs, it produces a mamzer. So we'll say, you know, to be a mamzer is a very, very, very serious situation. Your marriage pool is exceptionally limited and you're marked. You're marked. And the obvious kasha is, what did the kid do? Meaning, at the end of the day, the parents, right, committed a terrible avira. What did the kid do? Elamai will say, what's the answer? The answer is that when you come from such a union, there is a deficiency in you. That union has an impact on the individual. Both say, it's not a question, it's not fair, it's not this. Torah is telling us a reality. A reality. Now, does it mean you can't overcome that deficiency? Of course, I will say, you know, the Gemara talks about a mamzer talmud chacham. We're going to actually touch on this. Right? What's a mamzer talmud chacham? It's not a talmud chacham who's a jerk, right? But a mamzer talmud chacham is kishmo kein hu, literally a man who's a mamzer, but becomes a great talmud chacham. So great covet is accorded to that individual. You could transcend those limitations, but those limitations are there. What Shabbos says is an incredible yisod. Anything and whatever parents bring into a marriage, whoever they are, has a residual effect on the child, and the child is saddled with that baggage. So Shabbos says, therefore, the Gemara is saying over here, therefore, when getting married, one should be vigilant, ultimately, again, about the family that one is marrying into. We'll discuss the practical applications of this. Now, but one should be careful because Lemaisa, those realities have an impact not only on the person you're marrying, but has an impact on the genetic material ultimately that's going to make up the future offspring. So the Gemara says, Shmamina, what do we learn from this? Amar Rava. Rava says, Hanosei Isha, Tzarech Sheyivdok Ba'achea. Rava says, interestingly enough, so you see from here that if one goes in and marries a girl, if you want to know how someone's going to turn out, or if you want to get an insight into future offspring, look at her brothers. Look at her brothers. Shenemar, Vayikach Aaron es Elisheva bas Aminadav Achos Nachshon. So the Torah says that Aaron married Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon. Mimasha Shenemar bas Aminadav in Adesh Achos Nachshon. So now, once you tell me that she's the daughter of Aminadav, I know that she's the sister of Nachshon. Or Zabos said, I know all of these relationships. Ma Talmudomer Achos Nachshon. So why does the Torah have to say that Aaron married Elisheva? Once you tell me she's the daughter of Aminadav, I know that she's the sister of Nachshon. Why the need to say that she is the sister of, again, Nachshon ben Aminadav? Mikan Shanose Isha Sarach Sheyivdok Ba'acheha. We'll say, what do we see from here? We see that when you marry a woman, you should check out her brothers. Why? Tana Rov Banim Domin La'ache Ha'em. This is a very interesting statement. Because if you want to get an idea how your sons are going to turn out, so again, most sons in some way resemble their uncles. So most sons ultimately, again, resemble their mother's brothers in some way. So I'll say, so I just taste something very interesting on this, which is quite fascinating. So in the Sefer Igra Dikalo, Sefer Igret Kali brings down. He says, "Im kein, that it's important to check out the brothers before you go ahead and marry someone. Then lama Yitzchak Avinu lakach achos lavan? How does Yitzchak Avinu go ahead and marry Rivka when Rivka Imenu was the sister of Lavan?" So he goes right, and again we know Yitzchak Avinu has an Esav. He has an Esav, so listen to this. This Igret Kali gives something amazing, which I think helps to contemporize this. Ela davar zeh shayich rak kasher nose isha stam ve'ein yadua lo im hi bas zugo min hashamayim olo. I will say, so this is interesting. The Igret Kali says, when do you have to worry about the brothers? That's when you're just marrying an isha stam. Now, I'm not sure exactly what it means when you're marrying an Isha Stam. But I'm guessing what that means is you're marrying someone and you don't know them. You don't know them. In other words, what the Igret Kali is probably referring to over here is just a simple arranged marriage where you don't really know the person. So when you don't really know the person and you're not 100% sure about that level of connection, so Lemaisa, again, the best metric to see what the success of the marriage is going to be is by looking at her family. But Lemaisa, ach kasher barur lo ki hi bas zugo. But they both say, when you are clear that someone is your zug, that someone is mamish your bashert, then ein ze yachal lehishtanos. Then both say, then the truth is, essentially what the Igret Kali is saying is that the bashert outweighs who her family is. That once a person sees that a certain woman is his bashert, that's bas zugo, that's the woman you should marry. What about her family? You'll figure it out, right? You'll figure it out. And therefore, again, Rivka halo haisa zivugo min hashamayim. We'll say it's an incredible yisod. Rivka was Yitzchak Avinu's bashert. What about the mishpacha? Right, we'll say, remember again, Yitzchak Avinu does not marry into a mishpacha with incredible yichus. So what about the mishpacha? You'll deal with the mishpacha, but lemaisa, more important is that the woman is the bashert. We'll say, I think this is very important, because again, I think this gives us a way to understand these gemaras in a more contemporary sense. So the Maisa, again, you know, a number of you asked me after the shir, you know, one of the big problems that happens today, presently, in the world of Shiduchim, is this preoccupation sometimes with Yichos, with Mishpacha, but yet it seems to be right from the Gemara. So I think that's where this Igret Kali comes in. I will say, see, you're right, if you don't know the person you're marrying, then the only metric you have to see if it's a good Shidduch or not is the Mishpacha, is the Yichos. But assuming that a person actually is getting to know their future spouse, and a person feels that this woman, this man is my Bas Zug, this is my partner, then the Igret Kali is saying is that connectivity, that connection, that feeling that this person is mashlim me, that feeling that this person is my bashert, that's the ikar. That's the most important thing. And mishpacha and the yichus ultimately, again, takes a back seat. Okay, Gemara goes weiter. Says the Gemara, v'yasuru. So now the Gemara goes down. We're back to Micha a little bit. So remember again, back to Micha. Remember again, so by Pesel Micha, Yonasan, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, was serving as the Kohen Gadol. So he is now approached by the members of Shevet Dan. V'yasuru v'yomer, mi habyacha halom. So they say to this guy, to this young man, Yonasan, what are you doing here? Now again, we're going to understand what this conversation is in just a moment. Mi habyacha halom, who brought you here? Uma'ata oseh bazeh, what are you doing? What are you doing here? Umalachapo, why are you here? Amrulos, what's the nature of their questions? Tim, they say to Yonasan, Lav mi Moshe ka'asis. So we'll say, they're asking Yonasan, they're not giving him Musar. Because remember again, these are the same people who were trying to hire him away to work for them in Dun. But what they're saying is, how exactly did you wind up here? Right, meaning you are the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. How exactly did you wind up as a high priest for idolatry? Amrulo labmi Moshe ka'asis, do you not descend from Moshe Rabbeinu? D'chsiv bei, al tikrav halom. Do you not descend? What the Gemara is picking up on over here is that the words they used are found in different psukim by Moshe Rabbeinu. By Moshe Rabbeinu, by the Sneh, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to him, Al tikrav halom, do not come close. So they say to him, Mi haviyacha halom, aren't you descendant from the one who, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Al tikrav halom, Lav mi Moshe ka'ases tichsiv be mazeh biyadecha, are you not descendant from Moshe Rabbeinu? Who Kodesh Baruch Hu said to him, Mazeh biyadecha, reference to the staff, what is the staff doing in his hand? And they say to him, ultimately, Uma'ata osefo, Lav mi Moshe ka'ases tichsiv be va'ata po amod imadi ta se coin lavo de zara. So they're asking this young man, Yonasan. Now again, I want to be clear. These people who are questioning Yonasan are themselves idol worshippers. But what they're amazed is by what? is that how is it that the son, the grandson, the inical of Moshe Rabbeinu, is the kind of our father's wife? I just want to point something out. You see from this Gemara the incredible beauty of a Jew. See, I'll say, every single Jew is magnificently beautiful. But you know why? You know why Jews are exceptional? Because at the end of the day, even when we're doing things that are so bad, deep down, we always know what's right. So you understand what's happening in this conversation? What's happening in this conversation is the Ovdei Avodah Zarah from Dan have come to try to give a better offer to Yonah's son to get him to come to run their Avodah Zarah temple back in Shevet Dan. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Back in Shevet Dan. So what happens? As they're coming and they're interviewing him and they realize his yichus, essentially what they say to him is, you know, you should really know better. You should really know better. We expected more from you. You guys are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, right? You're worshipping idolatry. What they're saying essentially is yeah, but we're regular people. You're the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning you should know that this is not the right derech. So what are you doing? Such an incredible exchange. So we'll say, get ready for this. Get ready for this. If you did the entire Daf Yomi just for this section, it was worth it. So Amar Lahem. So Yonasan says, I'm going to tell you how I got here. Kach mikublani mi beis avi abba. Here is the Masorah. Here's the tradition that I have from my grandfather, from Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the Masorah I have? Li'olam yaskir adam atzmo la'avodah zarah va'al yitztarech lebrios. I have a Masorah from my grandfather. The Masorah from my grandfather is that it is better for a person literally to hire himself out to work for idolatry and not dependent on anyone, not to be dependent on anyone else. That I will say, ultimately, again, I learned from my grandfather, the greatest and most important thing in life, Rabbi Osai, is to make it on your own. Is to be independent, is to be self-reliant, not to have to depend on anyone else. And even if you have to go ahead and work for Avodah Zarah, then ultimately, again, that's what one should do. So the Gemara says, really? Is that what Moshe Rabbeinu told his great children and grandchildren? So the Gemara says, yes, but he meant it a little bit differently. Belohi, what does Avodah Zarah mean? Avodah Shezara Lo. Rabbi said, what it means is that the most important thing in life is the ability to make it on your own, to be independent. And even if that requires of you to do Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah doesn't mean idolatry. It's Avodah Shezara Lo, work that is alien to you, or work that you may deem to be beneath you. It is better to have some job and to be independent than to have no job and to be dependent. That's Avodah Shezara Lo. Kedamali Rav Rav Kana, as Rav said to Rav Kana, Netosh Nevelta Beshuka Beshakol Agra. It is better to skin carcasses in the marketplace and to get paid for the Tema Gavra Rabba Ana Vizila Bimilsa than to say, I am a great man and this work is beneath me. So again, what's happening over here is the following, that Lemaisa, and there's an incredible Musr in this. But at the end of the day, what the Gemara is saying over here is that Yonasan said, listen, I'm really just taking the Masorah of my Zayt, of Moshe Rabbeinu. He always taught us that again, better to even work for idolatry than to be dependent. So Yonasan essentially says, listen, this is a good gig. You know, this is a good paying job, right? I have to be honest with you. It pays well. You get to meet all kinds of people. I even get to travel a little bit. Benefits are great. So at the end of the day, he's saying, I'm working and I'm independent. Bosai, yet he misunderstood the teaching. Bosai, you understand over here. Now, whether he misunderstood the teaching or perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu didn't explain it sufficiently. Bosai, you see an incredible yisod. You see how parents have to be explicitly clear in the messages they give their children. Because if the messages are garbled, and if the messages are contradictory, and if the messages are not coherent, that's how we mess up our kids. And I can't tell you, this is my sin b'chol yom, where parents say one thing, but their behaviors, their lifestyle, the way they run their home, does not reflect the values they espouse with their mouth. And when you do that, understand what that leads to. These two confused children who don't find a proper derech in life. Yonasan wasn't a bad man, as we're going to see. Yonasan was a very good man. Yonasan was a confused man because there was a Masorah from his family that was not properly explained to him. No one told him that Avodah Zarah doesn't mean idolatry. Now, you could say you could have, should have figured it out, but instead he understands that Avodah Zarah means idolatry. When it meant instead, Avodah Shezarah Lo, no work is beneath you when you need to go ahead and earn a parnasa. Better to have a job than to have no job and ultimately be dependent. I'm sorry. No, you're going to see why in just a little bit. Moshe, you got to think better of people. It's not rationalizing. He's a good man. So I'll say, so we'll see. But again, I can't tell you enough. This is the Yisod. Can't give contradictory messages or ambiguous messages. If we really want to convey a certain set of values to our children, we have to make sure, again, that not only do we espouse them, but we live them and we model them as well. An incredible Yisod. So we'll say, so the Gemara goes weiter. Kevan Shira David. So we'll say, fast forward a little bit. And this is actually pretty wild. Kevan Shira David. The Gemara seems to say over here that Yonasan was still alive at the time of David HaMelech, which I will say would have made him exceptionally old. So when David HaMelech saw that Yonasan liked money, they will say, now what does it mean that Yonasan liked money? In other words, that Yonasan, there's actually no deeper like esoteric meaning over here. He liked money. So therefore, again, and Lemaisa, that's why I took this job as a Kohen Avodah Zarah, because it paid well. So when David saw that at his court he was a good man, but that he liked money, Mino ala Otsros, David HaMelech put him in charge, ultimately, again, of the king's treasury. Shenemar, Ushavuel ben Gershom ben Menashe, Nogid ala Otsros. Shavuel, the son of Gershom, son of Menashe, was in charge of the treasury. Vichy Shavuel Shmo, but was his name Shavuel? V'halo Yonasan Shmo. His name was Yonasan. So why does it call him Shavuel? What is this? How beautiful this is. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Sheshav Lekel Bechol Libo. Ultimately, again, why is he called Shavuel? He's called Shavuel because Shavu Kel, he did Shuva, he returned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of his hearts. So we'll say, the Gemara says that one of the things that makes people sometimes do bad things is Parnasa, or is the need to make Parnasa. Yonasan was a good man at his core. This was apparently the way he was able to make Parnasa, was through being a Kohen Avodah Zarah. David HaMelech realized his goodness, offered him this opportunity, and once he was able to make his Parnasa, ultimately, again, Beheter, he was able to do proper Shuva. Now, I'll show you something amazing. Take a look at the Rashbam. It's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines in the wide lines of the Rashbam. So the Rashbam says over here, he says, "Sheshav lekel b'chol libo, achshav shayu l'mamon harbe." So we'll say, now that he had a lot of money, he was able to return back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'im yishum d'chsiv, v'yonasam megershom menashu, u'banav kohanim l'shevet adani, ad yom gelos ha'aretz, skip down a little bit. V'arminu b'seder olam, ad yom shegal amat adan apostol shal micha imo, kach before shvar basur d'brachos, masivan lei, v'aksiv, I just want to find the right part in this. Okay, I'll say, if you go to the last two short lines in the Rashbam, listen to this. V'herich yom achrei shaysa inotzar b'avodah zarah shel kitzad. But the last two short lines, watch this. The Rashbam describes here how Yonasan conducted himself when he was the high priest for the idolatry. Kitzad hava, what happened? So kitzad, hava bar nash maisile tur or emar o gedil avodah zarah. So we'll say here, the following is going to play out. Somebody would come to offer up their offering in the avodah zarah for Micha, for Pesel Micha, right? In the idolatrous house of Micha, Yonasan was the Kohen Gadol. So they bring their pigeon, they bring their goat, they bring their lamb, whatever they were bringing. V'hava amrlei, faisei alai. And they would come, they would give it to Yonasan, the Kohen Gadol, and they say, Yonasan, daven for us. V'hu amar, so they'll say, get ready for this. What would Yonasan tell the supplicants who were coming to the idolatry? Maho ilo lacha. What good is this idol going to do for you? Lo achla, v'lo shosa, v'lo mativa, v'lo maria. This idol doesn't eat, it doesn't drink, it doesn't do good. Meaning, essentially, what Yonasan would say when people would show up to worship the idolatry is, what are you thinking? What are you, a fool? This thing doesn't do anything. Why are you worshiping it? Amar le umay navid. So also, you can imagine the supplicant is there. It could be a little bit confounding when the high priest of the idolatry gives you musr for showing up to worship the idol because the idol does nothing. So they say to Yonasan, so what do you suggest we do? Amar le zil aisili chada finach, disolas, ve'esar bayin, iloi, v'ani afayis lacha, v'ani afayis la. So Yonasan said, you know what? I have an idea. Give me the item and I'll daven on your behalf to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'll say, this is what Yonah's son said. Right? So he would make his parnasa, because people essentially would go ahead and give him money or give him items, and he would daven to the Ribono Shel Olam on their behalf. So both say, amazingly enough, as Kohen Gadol, he accomplished two things. Number one is, essentially, he went ahead and he dissuaded people from worshipping idolatry. And ultimately, he was able to connect them in some way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chevan da'azalei, achi alon, asachad barpachin, v'amarlei, im kein, amarlei, im einam o'ilaklum, ma'ata avid acha, amarlei, begein chayi kevah shavosei. Again, so ultimately, they confronted Yonah's son. They said, Yonah's son, so if you don't believe in this idolatry, then why are you the high priest? And Abba said, the answer is, because a job is a job, right? Because Lameisa, again, at the end of the day, provided him with his parnasa, and allowed him to go and not have to be dependent on him. I want to be clear. The Gemara is obviously not condoning this practice, but Lameisa, what it's trying to give us is a window into why Yonah's son, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, did what he did, a misunderstood level of chinuch, but ultimately the ability to set people on the right path, even when they came to worship idolatry, and ultimately Shavuel, he's known as, because he's able to do tshuva. Incredible, so many incredible important lessons. We'll say back to the laws of inheritance. So remember again, the Mishnah said that sons inherit their father. Where do we know this from? So we'll say the Pasuk says, this is by the inheritance of a daughter. If a man will die, you will go ahead, if a man dies and he has no sons, so you will give the inheritance to his daughters. What do you learn from here? Taima, the in lobein. When does the daughter get the inheritance? Shavuot say when there is no son. Ha yesh lobein. But if lemaisa again a man has a son, ben kodem. Then ultimately again a son is a first position inheritor. Amar le Rav Papa la Abaye. So Rav Papa said to Abaye, Ema, why don't you say the following? Iika ben leiros ben. Why don't you say the following? If the deceased left behind the son will inherit. Is ika bas teros bas. And if there's a daughter, the daughter inherits. In other words, if he only leaves behind one child, a daughter or a son, that child inherits. What about benobas? What happens if he leaves behind a son or a daughter? Then maybe I would say, lo hai leros, lo hai leros. Then neither should inherit. In other words, maybe the halachah is like this. If there's a son, the son inherits. If there's a daughter, the daughter inherits. But if there's a son and a daughter, no one should inherit. What does that mean? The ella, amud beis. The ella, man. So I'll say, if that's the case, Ela man liros. So ultimately, again, so then who would inherit in such a case? Like, right, I have a mina. Who should inherit? Liros, atu bar kasha de masa liros. Should the governor, the local governor of the town, should he be the one that inherits the deceased? Rabbi Mar says, no, this is what I mean to say. Hachi kanina. Here's what I meant to say. Ika ben ubas. Lo hai liros kole. Velo hai liros kole. Ila ki adadi lirosu. Rather, the Havamina will say is the following, that maybe, if a man leaves behind only a son, so the son gets all the property. A man leaves behind only a daughter, the daughter gets all the property. But maybe if a man leaves behind a son and a daughter, maybe they should split it. And maybe they should split the estate. Amar le Abaye, so Abaye says the following, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. Amen. Amar le Abaye, the Itzrikas, according to that logic, the Itzrik Kra, would I need a pasuk? La Ashmu'inon, Heicha, the Lesle Ela Chad Vera, Lera Sinhu Kulu Nechasi. We'll say, if that's the case, would I need a pasuk to teach me that when there's only one son, that that son inherits the entirety of his father's estate? In other words, that's obvious. The Dilma HaKamash Malon, maybe he's coming to teach me, the Bas Nami Bas Yerushahim. Maybe the pasuk is coming to teach me that a daughter is shayich in the laws, is also included in the laws of inheritance, to which the Gemara says, no, we learned that at Hahu, may the call bas yoreshes nachla nafka, we learned that Abba said from the pasuk that says, and every daughter who inherits a portion. So we'll say, we're trying to figure out one simple thing. We're trying to figure out ultimately, again, how we know biblically that a son inherits a father. So the Gemara so far gave one approach. The first approach is, ish kiyamus uben einlo, if a man will die and he doesn't have a son, v'havartem esnachalaso libito. You will give the inheritance to his daughter. So we'll say, even though I don't have a pasuk that says explicitly that a son inherits a father, it's understood from that pasuk. The Torah is telling me that if a man dies, he doesn't have a son, so the property goes to his daughter, which leads me to understand what? That if he does have a son, that the son is the sole inheritor. that the son is the sole inheritor. As we'll say, the way it sounds like from the laws of inheritance is that it's an either or by a daughter. It's an either or by. Just you should know these are important halachos to know, because in one's own estate planning, you can speak to Rabbi Yaakov, right? But in one's own estate planning, so ultimately again one has to be conscious of these realities, understanding how the laws, the halachic laws, govern one's estate, and if one wants their estate divided up differently, there are mechanisms in which one could do that. One wants all of their children to share in property. There are ways that one could do that, but one wants to make sure one does that in accordance with halacha. So I said these are important, but this is the default. This is the event that one did nothing. In a vacuum, these would be the halachos that would be in place. So therefore, again, the Torah is teaching me that there's sole inheritance by a son. When there's a son, he's the sole inheritor. When there's no son but there's a daughter, she is the sole inheritor. When there's a son and a daughter, the son is still the sole inheritor. So the Gemara goes right there. The Gemara says, Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar Mehacha. So we'll say Rav Acha bar Yaakov wants to learn out this concept that a son inherits his father from here. So the pasuk says, this is by Benos Tzlacha. So remember again, Benos Tzlacha, the daughters of Tzlacha. Tzlacha was a man who died without sons. His daughters come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, what is going to happen to our father's portion in Eretz Yisrael? We'll say, this was the first time that such a situation like this had come up. In other words, let's say, obviously, this had come up that a man died with no sons, but remember, we were slaves for the last 210 years, so there was no property ownership. Now we're going into Eretz Yisrael. So the daughters of Tzlafchad want to know what is going to happen to our father's portion. So what happens? Amar Mehacha, Lama Yigara Shem Avinu Mitoch Mishpachto. So the daughters of Tzlafchad approach Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, why should our father's name be lost from our family, ki ein lo ben, just because he doesn't have a son. In other words, the daughters of Tzlacha are saying to Moshe, essentially, we should inherit our father's portion. Why? Because there's no son. So the Gemara understands something very interesting. Taima de ein lo ben. Now, the only reason that Benos Tzlacha were approaching Moshe Rabbeinu was why, Rabosai? Why? Because they had no brother. There was no surviving son. Ha yesh lo ben, ben kodem. Bose, it's clear from the way that they're talking to Moshe Rabbeinu that the only reason they're approaching is because there is no living son. Were there to be a living son, they would not have approached Moshe Rabbeinu. So what do you see from here? You see even just from this context that it's clear that when there is a son inherits the father. So also listen to this. Maybe this was Benos Slavcha just speaking of their own thoughts. In other words, maybe Benos Slavcha are saying, this has nothing to do with halacha, but just based on the norms, had there been a son, we would not have said anything. But lamaisa, there is no son, that's where we're asking for our father's portion. But they're not coming from a, meaning you can't infer halacha from their position, they just might be saying what appears to them to be intuitive. And therefore, nitna Torah, b'nischat shalacha. Maybe once the Torah was given, the Torah understands this type of dynamic a bit differently. Elo, rather, I will say, you have to say that rather, we have to learn out like we darshan before. In other words, that we learn out the fact that a son inherits his father from the pasuk of Ish Kiyamos Uben Ein Lo Vavartim Esnachalosa Lebito. It's only when there's no son that the inheritance goes to the daughter. Aye, but if there is a son, the son is the sole inheritor. So the Gemara goes, Ravina Avram Mehalcha, so the Gemara is not finished. Again, we're just trying to find the pasuk that teaches us that a son inherits his father. Ravina Avram Mehalcha, so Ravina says from here, Hakarov Eilav, also when it comes to inheritance, the Torah says, the one who is closest to the deceased is the one who inherits him. Hakarov Karov Kodem, he who is closer to the deceased has a earlier position, or has a stronger position in inheritance. So Gemara is suggesting over here that a son has a closer position or a closer relationship to his father than a daughter. So Gemara says, how do you know that? Umay korva de ben mibas. Why is a son any closer to his father than a daughter? Shekein sheben kam tachas aviv liyada ulesteachuza. We'll say, so here we know, because a son comes in the position of his father for yud. We spoke about this before. Father purchases an ama ivriya, a Hebrew maidservant. There is a mitzvah upon the father to marry this girl. If the father chooses not to do so, then what? The son has the right to do so. The son, now the son has the right to do so, but the son could use the very purchase money as kesef kiddushin. So you see that the son stands in the place of the father. Furthermore, I will say, we said, we learned this matter 2 days ago, stei achuza, redemption of ancestral land. So remember again, if the original owner of the land redeems the land, it stays with him even in the Yovel year. If someone other than the original owner redeems the land, it goes back to the Kohanim in the Yovel year. A son is like a father, it was like his father in redemption of ancestral land. So you see from here that from a halachic perspective, the bond between father and son is stronger, and therefore I would say that a son is the first position inheritor after his father dies. So this is 1 second, that's not a good proof. Because one simple reason, Yada Vaslav Yadahi. So we'll say when it comes to Yod, then obviously a daughter is not shaykh to that, meaning that's not a fair comparison, because obviously the daughter cannot marry the Amma Ivriya. So that's not fair to say that Lemaisa, that's a son, that the son has a stronger relationship. Stei achuza, nami mihai pircha gufa. Abosa, remember again, stei achuza, remember we also learned that, let's go back just for a few days. The Torah tells us that someone other than the original owner of the field has the ability to redeem it and retain it. Torah doesn't tell us who that person is. We infer who that person is from the following: the Hakaima Leilatano Klum Yesh Yibum Ella Bimakum Shein Ben. And we'll say, we learned that out, but remember, because of the following: since if there's a son, there's no Yibum, therefore the presence of the son ultimately again is something important. The son seems to be the closest living relationship to his father, and therefore again we plug him into that Stei Achuza equation. But I will say, ultimately again, one can make the same argument by a daughter. If there is a daughter, there's also no Yibum. Ella Mechabartam Kiddushin Meikar. Other people say, the Gemara keeps saying, let's go back to our original pasuk. I will say, Vavartam Esnachalasa Lebito. It's only if it's in Lo Ben, it's only if there's no son that the daughter gets the Yerusha, which tells us that if there is a son, ultimately again he inherits. We'll say that's the pasuk we're learning it from. Vibay Seima, another possibility, Mehacha, Visnachaltim Osam Lemechem Acharechem. I will say, interestingly enough, the pasuk says, and you shall go ahead, Visnachaltim Osam Lemechem Acharechem. La reshes achuza li olam bam bavodir. Both is actually talking about avodim kinanim. If a man has servants, slaves, right, Gentile servants, and he dies, those are considered property and are passed down to his son. So we'll say, what do you see over here? Beneichem v'lo b'noseichem. We'll say, beneichem is dafka. Dafka, who does the property get passed down to? It gets passed down to my sons and not to my daughters. So from here you see that for inheritance purposes, it's the son who inherits when there is a son and not the daughter. But if that's the case, leman yirbu yimeichem v'yimei beneichem, hachinami beneichem v'lo b'noseichem. So we'll say, if that's the case, you're going to tell me that beneichem always means your sons and doesn't just mean your children. What about the fact when the Torah says, we read this in Kriyat Shema, that if you keep the mitzvos, you shall do so in order that your days shall be prolonged. Your days and your children's days. Is that only being said by sons and not daughters? To which the Gemara says, ultimately again, bracha shiny. Bracha is different. And we'll say, by bracha it's clear, anytime Torah seeks out blessing, so b'neichem never just means b'neichem, but rather, again, b'neichem means b'neichem and binosechem, your sons and your daughters. So we'll stop over here, and I want to share with you just a short idea on the parsha.